Okay, I think we are ready to proceed with a significant parade this afternoon of seven different bureaus and functions that we're going to try to cover in one afternoon. So, as always, brevity is the soul of wit, and we'll try to all be both brief and witty. So with that, I'll turn it over to Fred Miller to make the first presentation, and we'll move on from there.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, Fred Miller, OMF. Let me give you what I see as the show today from our end, and so you can see where we're headed and what's coming up. I'm really going to be dealing with that four-pager because it shows our organization as well as significant issues and says something about decision packages. And my suspicion is it'll take me 10 or 15 minutes to go through at a fairly high level the major decision packages. Ken Rust will then talk about equalizing rates in the Portland building. That was a request that you made, and it ties in here some. And again, that'll be pretty quick. As well as he'll talk about a couple of revenue-raising decision packages. After that time, we have a couple of members of our Budget Advisory Committee who'll comment on the process, and then CBO will do what they do, and you can get into whatever detail you'd like. To the extent you get into details on decision packages, I think all the bureau directors are here, and we can handle that. So if that's fine with you, I will go through it basically that level, and we'll see what it generates. The first page of the handout that I referred to shows an organization that I think you're familiar with and who's in the different chairs. I know that you know all of the people, but sometimes it's a reminder to see how OMF is organized and what's included there. And I think not too much more has to be said right there. I think we're best served if I get into the significant issues and talk about some of those that generate packages, but in any case, handle them. I guess before that, I should talk a little bit about process and what we're doing. We had a pretty robust process on putting this budget together. Our Budget Advisory Committee was very helpful. And we actually made some decisions based on their advice and made some changes that ended up, I think, with a better package. And we also talked with all of our bureaus because our functions basically are services to different bureaus. We don't have much of an external footprint, but we provide services of all varieties that you're aware of to bureaus. So we did deal with bureau directors and later the business managers from the bureaus to say, because they frequently are the ones that know most about what we're doing and cost and so on. So we had a fairly process-oriented effort to put this together, and I think you'll find that people are happy. And without trying to get Claudio in trouble, they also, CBO was helpful, I think, in raising some questions and making it a better product. So process-wise, I feel pretty good about it. The underlying issue, I think, is how do we find optimal service levels and centralization of services? Because we don't believe everything should be centralized, but there are some things that we have more of a footprint on than others, and you always have to find the right mix. In procurement, there are some divided responsibilities, and it's not always clear who has the ball, but in discussing it with the council, we thought they're comfortable with where it is. In BTS, we think we need a little bit of help, and we're working on this. I'm putting a stronger governance program together so that when someone has a major acquisition, other bureaus can look at it and see if it's an opportunity for them or if it's duplication and to make better decisions. We have a BHR model that I think works pretty well, human resources, that is. Works pretty well. We have embedded resources in different entities, and then, of course, Anna's centralized function. So we are doing what we can there. That's always up for improvement, but I think we're in decent shape in terms of of where we stand on the centralization. So on to the major issues that are listed. Ken previously gave you a presentation on what I call years 6 through 20, and recall when the CFO position was added, there's no doubt that Andrew and CBO does the five-year forecast related to budget, but the question is who's looking out for years 6 through 20? And Ken has taken that on, and I think the presentation of the council was pretty successful, saying, here are the kinds of things you should look at in the future. Andrew has pointed out that we exist right now with somewhat of a math problem where revenues are not growing as fast as expenditures, just in the short run. But in the long run, when you look at PERS, liabilities, harbor cleanup, Columbia River levies, the infrastructure backlog, there are just lots of draws out there. And just in terms of that, as we list that as a significant issue, someone, whether it's this council or future councils, will have lots to deal with there. So Ken's going to be talking a little bit about the revenue collection positions that are decision packages, because they help us take a step towards addressing those both current and longer-term needs. The Portland building is the second issue, and I think I know we're on track on that. We're moving ahead at a pretty good pace. Basically, there's not a funding issue for you, because we already, as you recall, have allocated some funds that were aimed for previously for maintenance to the reconstruction project. There was a general fund allocation you already approved, I think it's like $2.3 million. And then for whatever other needs we have this budget year, we're going to do some short-term line of credit. So there's no big decision for you to make, and I think through our work sessions and discussions, you're pretty familiar with where we're headed. And we'll be back to visit you at least by May in terms of talking about progress and where we are. So that's a very big item, but it's one that does not have any additional budget consequences for you. The next one listed is the data center and disaster recovery. And recall that we have a project that is not part of the Portland building reconstruction, but is happening simultaneously. And on the high side, those two things we're estimating with low confidence about $10 million. We think we can do it for less. For this next year, it's about $2 million, and the CBO has recommended the appropriate general fund and the other funds to manage that, and then putting aside some general fund for longer-term needs for the data center. And that one is moving along as well. There's a decision to make, but if you looked at what we submitted and what CBO has done, there's no particular controversy there. Okay, I slipped my hand there, all right. In terms of the employer of choice major issue, that's something you've heard us talk about before. Human Resources is doing a good job addressing how do we make City of Portland the place where people want to work if they want to be in the public sector in the Portland area. And they've developed some onboarding programs and training programs and programs dealing with near retirees. It's a big deal for the city, I think, because I think you've heard the statistics that 33% of our employees could retire within the next 3 years. Within OMF, it's 44%. And so I think there are huge opportunities in terms of how we structure ourselves and bring people on. But it also means we've got responsibilities to develop people we have and move them along. And there are a couple of decision packages that relate to that. In particular, there's an FTE related to training, and there's some recommendation to have a training fund for employees. And that Anna can talk about if we want to get there. But I'm waiting for, when I finish, for CBO to kick off whatever they want to talk about in decision packages before bringing people up. The equitable outcomes, we are not outwardly facing, as I mentioned, but have done a number of things this last year that relate to improving our understanding of equity issues. We had a joint with PGE, a transgender-related conference. We had one where we actually had Tom Potter and some ex-policemen involved. Lift Every Voice was the theme. That have just brought people in, and it's been interesting. And did joint with Multnomah County, did something on implicit bias that got a good turnout. So we have been doing some things that bring a lot of people in, even though they're not directly our customers. It helps in terms of the employee understanding. For our decision packages relating to equitable outcomes, this is the second or third time that Anna's had a package related to the model employer resolution related to handling people with disability, where I don't think we've appropriately staff that, and she could speak to that if she'd like. The Equitable Contracting and Procurement Commission, there's a half position here to staff them that is very important to the commission that we have recommended, and there's a small amount of money for the Socially Responsible Investment Commission. So those things relate in that category and will move us ahead some. The last one I list is the confidential and restricted information, which is beyond what we used to call just personally identifiable information. Recall this last year, a number of people have done some really good work across bureaus to get payment card industry data off our system, and it is now off our system. There's one more letter of attestation of a private vendor that everything's fine, but we essentially, from the city point of view, are clean. And that's been a huge accomplishment that I went to an award ceremony a little while back where probably 45 or 50 people were being recognized for efforts there. And it's not just, there was a lot of BTS work, but a lot of work in water, it's a very big deal, and transportation, parks, and so on. And they're all clean. So I think that's a big deal. Coming up, what we're trying to do is prepare a template for how to handle all the other personally identifiable information, and we have lots of it within the city. And there are state statutes that relate to that. This is not an OMF project. We're trying to get a template and saying this is the challenge, but all of the bureaus are going to have to take that on. And it's not going to be over a year. I think it's going to be over a couple of years that it finally gets done. So I raise that as a big issue. Probably you won't see a lot of it during that period, but I heard a situation where someone needed just someone's birthday and the last four digits of Social Security number. And I'm told by smart people in our security area that you can, with a 90% probability, can find all someone's private data with the last four digits and a birth date. I mean, there are things that we don't generally recognize that we have to be careful of. And I think there are data stored in boxes and sometimes on computer systems, but we just have to be conscious of that and take care of it. So that's going to happen, and we'll have that teed up in another. Mary, I don't know if you're involved in that one personally. Your office is, but okay. But I think within the next month, that's going to get kicked off, and then you'll see some people scrambling to do that. So in terms of major issues, I don't think there's a lot you have to worry about. I mean, things are happening. They're not, given the magnitude of some of those issues, that they're not huge decisions to make. But I wanted to get it that far and let Ken pick up on the equalization of rates in which you're interested and has some budget implications and the revenue positions.
Thanks, Fred. For the record, I'm Ken Rust. I'm the city's chief financial officer and the director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. There's a handout that I'm going to be speaking to. Looks like this. It deals with an update on the blended or equalized downtown office space rates. And just for purposes of refreshing our memories, we had a work session with the council in August of last year. And we brought to the council a proposal to look at a concept of equalizing or blending the rates that we charge all downtown City of Portland tenants, whether they are in city-owned buildings like this building or the Portland building, or they are in outside lease space. We also had a recommendation from our oversight committee that's advising us on the Portland building that that's a concept that they believed was important for the city to consider as well. We also wanted to reinforce some of the policies that the council has adopted over the years, which is our priority is for our bureaus to be in our owned space, not in leased space. If we are in leased space, it should be in historic buildings to support those buildings in the downtown and throughout the city. The benefits of the equalized cost approach is that it provides us more certainty and predictability for bureaus and tenants for the long term. We can help provide more consistent levels of service and amenities in all of the buildings we own as a consequence. And long-term, owning our space is the least cost option for the city. So those are the things that we're kind of framing this question of equalizing rates. And that was part of the discussion that we had in August. What we heard from council at the conclusion of the work session was that, yes, go proceed with the blended or equalized rate concept for downtown office space only. We would also exclude public safety. So it would include the fire bureau, the police bureau, the only four those non-public safety bureaus to update our financial model, because at that time we had talked about the budget for the Portland building and had locked on a new number at $195 million. So we were directed to use that number in our future projections. We were also asked to evaluate looking at an option that would begin the equalized or blended rates beginning in fiscal year 2017-18, in addition to what we were talking about at the time, I think was fiscal year 2020. We're now proposing fiscal year 2021, the year following when we would move back into the Portland building as a start date for equalized rates, and that we would also work with Water and BES to explore an option where they would be able to own the floors that they would occupy in the Portland building. At that point in time, they weren't clear whether they wanted to be an owner or not. They've used that tool in the past. We needed to do some more work with them to figure out whether that was something that would make sense for them. So that's the direction that we received. And what we've done since then is we've updated our financial model to build a budget around that 195 figure, which includes a mixture of both borrowed funds and cash that will be contributed to the project. We've worked with Water and BES, and through the analysis that they have done with our assistance, they've concluded that they would like to be an owner of their space in the Portland building. So we've got that particular assumption nailed down. We've updated our modeling to reflect the fact that our discussions with Multnomah County have indicated that while they have a perpetual lease for the 14th and 15th floors of the building, that they don't intend to come back into the building once they leave when the reconstruction starts. So that those floors will be available for other city bureaus to occupy. And then we also then updated the analysis to include the two equalized rate options, one beginning in 2017-18 and one beginning in 2020-2021. So where does that lead us? On page 5, I tried to show what the different lease rates look like under these two different options for the different buildings and the leased space that we have in the downtown. And you'll see that we start in 2017-18, run through 2021, and the lease rates move around a fair amount because we have things happening with our respective buildings. So the Portland building is a relatively cheap building until it becomes a relatively expensive building with the reconstruction of the building. City Hall is a relatively cheap building now that the debt service is largely paid off on it. It's really the operating cost. The 1900 building is a more expensive building, but its lease rates would drop when the debt service falls off beginning in 2018-19. And then our private space is a mix of things, and we have an average that we're showing here at about $27 a square foot. If we move to an option where we begin equalizing those rates more quickly, what you see is that we would have equalized rates of about $22 a square foot in 2017-18. It drops in 2018-19, largely because the 1900 building debt service drops off, stays there until it increases to the $34 or so a square foot when the Portland building is constructed and the debt service begins there. So we have our two different pictures, one which has the equalization of rates being delayed, if you will, until 2020-2021, another one that has them start sooner. So what does that mean, ultimately, to the different bureaus? And I have a couple of pages. It's a little bit, a lot of information and a lot of numbers, but if you compare them side by side, you can really see what's going on. And I'm going to talk about the differences over the 5 years that we're talking about, because that helps to understand where this thing gets pushed around. And every single year, we recover the same amount of cost. It's just a matter of how those costs get allocated between the different tenants and occupants of the city building and lease space. So what really starts to change if you look between the 2021 option and the equalizing 2017-18 option, what's really happening there is that in that 2017-18 time period, you start to see some pretty big differences when compared to the first option. And what's really happening there is that we start to equalize rates sooner. What that means is people who are in the Portland building primarily start seeing a relatively large increase in lease rates in that particular year, because now we're covering the cost also of the 1900 building debt services folded into that cost pool, and all of the outside leases are folded into that cost pool. So transportation sees an increase of about $500,000. Development services, conversely, is the beneficiary of that. By moving to equalization earlier, they start to see a benefit of having the cost pool soften or dampen where their lease rates are at, because they're at around $30 or so a square foot. They're going to drop to $17 a square foot. They save about $1 million. And the Water Bureau, which is really a tenant in the Portland building, sees a relatively large increase from the alternative of about $400,000. So those are the two big winners and losers. Over the five-year time frame, the bottom line is that transportation would pay about $750,000 more if we equalize sooner. BDS would save about $1 million by equalizing sooner. Environmental services saves about $350,000, and water increases their cost by about $565,000. So that's really what's going on here. It's not unexpected. I think when we had the discussion in August, we could understand that if we started the equalization process sooner and before the 1900 building debt service was paid off, that the beneficiaries of that would largely be development services. And that when we spread those costs then beginning in that time period, other tenants see a larger bill depending on which particular building they're in. And so that's really what the analysis shows and really leads us back to, well, what should we do and when should we do it? I think where we're at from our point of view and our recommendation to you is that we still believe that the equalized cost structure and approach makes sense for us now and into the future, and we want to continue on that. It's really a matter of when we begin that implementation. Our preference is to begin implementation in fiscal year 2020, 2021, after we've completed the building and have moved back into it. That time period gives people the opportunity to get ready for the cost increases in their budgets. So we have about 4 or 5 years where people can start looking at what those changes will be, and so they can start preparing for those changes. And we think that that's where we're at now is the way to proceed with the particular recommendation. You know, we have more work to do. We have continued to work with BES on the financing plan of their ownership. We have a lot of work to do on the cash flow. But this gives you kind of an update to where we were in August about what equalized rates mean and what the impacts result from starting sooner versus starting later. So that's, we wanted to use this opportunity to bring that back to you for a discussion.
Ken, maybe it's because I haven't looked at these numbers in a while, or maybe it's because they're presented differently. But at any rate, I understand the cost shifting that's going on page 6, the interbureau effect. I get that. But I don't understand why the big jump from a total lease cost of $12 million in 16, 17, and $10 million in 18, 19 to jump up to $23 million in 2021.
Debt service on the Portland building reconstruction.
Thank you. I was in denial about that bill.
The debt service comes due in 2021.
That's when it starts. That's when we
the new debt service.
The new normal.
Yes.
Our new normal.
It really, it was I who raised the concern, and it really only benefits the tenants of the 1900 building for 1 year.
Correct.
If we were to do it earlier.
That's correct.
We should have been doing it. If we were going to be really fair, we should have been doing it for the previous 5 years, but we didn't think about it.
So,
but then you mentioned that the bureaus will need to find this new money in their budgets.
General fund bureaus have where we have it now is that the non-general fund bureaus will. The general fund bureaus, we have $2,570,000 or thereabouts. That is the number that has been approved by the council on an ongoing basis last fiscal year to pay expected costs for general fund bureaus associated with the reconstruction of the Portland building. So we still need to work out the details to see how that the finance plan spreads those costs to general fund bureaus, but we believe in the work that we've been doing with CBO's office, that the general fund-related contribution that's made available will largely cover the general fund bureaus.
You said that the bureaus would need to be thinking about how they're going to accommodate it in their budgets. You're not expecting the general fund bureaus to accommodate a doubling of their rent, are you, within their existing budget?
No, Commissioner, I don't believe that's the case because we already have resources for that.
Okay.
I'm speaking, you know, primarily for bureaus like transportation, for development services as well. The non-general fund supported bureaus will see an impact. Water and sewer are pretty familiar with that because we've been working with them on this ownership option. But one of the benefits the extended time gives us, that people can start building that into their financial plans and forecasts, so that by the time we get to fiscal year ending 21. This shouldn't be a surprise, and they'll be really prepared for it financially.
But again, back to my brain fade, that jumps up; it doesn't ramp up.
It's a stair step. Yes,
twice, three times. What?
Once.
Once. So it's a one step jump.
That's correct.
So we don't blend that in over, because the costs aren't all incurred in 1 year.
No, we're looking
bond
at
the whole thing. We're going to jump the rates once and
correct.
Once and
our plan right now is that we will, during the interim time period, we will utilize the cash resources that we have, interim lines of credit or borrowing, and then we'll do a long-term fixed-rate borrowing and begin debt service, which will become part of the cost pool for these blended rates at that point in time. But until that point in time, we're not looking to jump rates or change the cost pool to fund the ongoing construction costs. That's our plan right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Go ahead. Just push the button.
I'm so sorry. This will sound very ignorant of me, but what's really the advantage of the equalization, and when it's done, what's going to be the impact on those departments in their services if they have to come bring it up from their budget?
Well, for the general fund bureaus, the impact associated primarily with the Portland building will be taken care of by the resources that the council has already appropriated for the general fund component of this cost. So for the other bureaus that have a share of that cost, it's transportation and water and BES, they will need to accommodate that in their budget. That will have a budgetary impact. Right now, for example, PBOT's paying about just under $1 million for space in the Portland building. Under the equalized rate option, they'll be paying about $2.3 million. So that's a cost impact for them to be in that building, and that's one that we've been working with them on to understand what the impacts are. Those are the kinds of things that they'll have to work through as they prepare their budgets in those upcoming fiscal years.
And as PBOT Commissioner, I am worried about that because it means less money for maintenance, safety, and everything else. But from an overall government perspective, I have a hard time arguing against this rate equalization idea as a whole.
If there aren't any other questions, Fred wanted me to talk a little bit about revenue and revenue collections. And if you'll recall the conversation that we had back in January, when we had a discussion about the CAFR and some of the challenges facing the city, we talked about opportunities for revenue. Knowing that we got a challenge being able to fund all the things that we would like to fund when we'd like to fund them, where can we find additional revenue? One of those places is getting the money that we aren't currently collecting and collecting it. I refer to it as the low-hanging fruit. I think Fred may have said it's the fruit that's actually laying on the ground. We should go pick it up. And that really is going after it with more effort and more resources. So in the revenue division's budget ad package request, we have requests for additional positions that would be in the revenue collection piece, and also to help continue our efforts with the Federal Taxpayer Information Program, which we're just now starting to see the benefits of. I know we've been talking about that. It's been funded for the last couple of years, but you know, we've always measured what's called the tax gap, what we think on business license tax revenues, how much we're collecting versus how much still remains to be collected. In the past, we've made an estimate that number is somewhere around the $5 million mark or so. With the most recent information that we've just received by utilizing the federal taxpayer information data that we've received, we think that number is on the low side. We think that number could be easily twice as large. And using that federal taxpayer information then to go and directly find out why the companies that are in that database aren't in our database and why they aren't paying us if they should be paying us is the kind of effort that we would like to invest in, because for every dollar that we spend in those kinds of efforts, we yield $2 to $3 or $4 overall for the city and the county. So we think that that's fruit that's on the ground. We should invest the resources to pick it up. And we think we're now having some of the data tools that we've never had before that will allow us to really zero in on who's not paying us and not collect just the money that's owed to us on a going forward basis. But if they haven't been paying us up to this point, they owe us back payments and taxes and all kinds of things. So it's a one-time and an ongoing impact on general fund revenues. We think it's a really important thing that we should be doing in terms of improving the efficiency of our tax collection efforts to make sure that everybody who owes pays and people understand that that's their obligation and duty.
What was the figure again, Ken?
Excuse me?
What was the figure again?
Our estimate of the tax gap is now around the $10 million plus mark. And we, in prior estimates, based on the information that we had, lacking the more detailed view into federal taxpayer information, we estimated that was somewhere in the $5 million range. So that's the value that we're seeing by having you know, another data set that's rich with information that we don't have.
Piqued my interest here. And this is people who do not get a business license who should be getting a business license and therefore aren't paying Portland business tax?
That's part of it. It's a combination of things. It's those people who don't have a business license tax that should have a business license tax. It's those people who have a business license, rather. It's those people that have a business license, but that what they're reporting to us doesn't seem to match what they're reporting to other people. And so maybe they're under-reporting. There's a presumption, perhaps, that there's something that we need to look at. So it's a combination of things that we believe contribute to that expansion of the tax gap, which gives us confidence that the return on investment will be as great, if not greater, than we've thought in the past.
And what's the threshold before you start? I pay Multnomah County, but not Portland, because I don't hit some threshold, and I'm just curious what the threshold is at the business tax, because I know you try to avoid the...
There's an owner's compensation deduction, and I think it's now at $125,000.
Right, and then it's after that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm all for this, let me tell you.
Thank you.
So, if it's timely, I'd like to bring up our two budget advisory committee members, Pastor and Robert, to make, I gather what you're generally doing is brief comments on, does this make any sense from the citizens? From citizens and customers.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Catherine Ryland, and I'm the Fiscal Manager of the Police Bureau. Thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts on the OMF BAC process. I'm a little nasally, sorry, I'm getting over a cold. The OMF and BAC met multiple times over the past several months as we were building our 16-17 requested budget. OMF provided us with an overview of some of the service challenges that they're facing. The BAC was able to provide input to OMF on drafts of their budget packages, which resulted, I think, in a more prioritized and focused submission. The BAC encouraged OMF to carefully review their list of packages and determine the most critical to the priorities of housing and homelessness, core programs and services, and maintaining existing assets and infrastructure. The BAC was generally in agreement with the final list of ad packages as they met the critical needs expressed by customer bureaus or supported revenue collection. The BAC was in general agreement with the reduction packages as well. OMF budget packages that result in rate increases or direct cost to customer bureaus are always a concern. These concerns were part of the discussion, especially on the data center move project, specifically around ongoing operating costs, which are unknown at this point. And then with the CBO recommendations, also the equipment replacement fund. The concern is always the level of impact on customer bureau budgets, how to plan for those impacts, and how to provide input as far as alternatives. But overall, I think the BAC process is a good tool for effective budget development. It provides a forum for good discussion. I'd like to see us build on that and have these discussions more frequently year-round. Thank you.
Robert McCullough here. I've known Fred for many years. This is the bravest moment in his life.
I'm a risk taker on this.
You have more guts than I ever thought. I'm very impressed by the process. Fred, as we know, is a very experienced administrator. Well-organized meetings, precise, on-point presentations. I'll deny I ever said these things in any other forum, but for my interest, the primary focus was revenue and revenue collections. Steve and I had a small debate last year that involved different databases under the city's control. That included water and, of course, the all-important business tax. Our estimates coming out of that review were even higher than what you just heard from the Bureau representative. That's not an example of anyone failing. It's an example of a more complicated society. We have a very complex business environment and our business tax database has to follow it. I'm very pleased that we're adding personnel to that area. That's a situation where the cost-benefit ratio is wildly in favor of the benefit. Fact of the matter is, we had old tools. They weren't bad tools, but they were old tools, and we've got to have new tools. And the IRS database is absolutely critical. But one thing that may not be obvious to you is that doesn't do it by itself. That's a big data problem, and that requires some very heavy lifting. And we have a variety of people who will creep through the cracks even with the best data. Folks whose IRS filings appear to be in another state or another county, but whose primary business is here in the city of Portland. I had a minor difference with Fred and his staff on franchise operations, not surprising because I am an ex-utility executive. One of our major revenue streams in the city is the franchise area, and I want to make sure that's continuing to be staffed. In a slightly bizarre sense, we also gave them the internet, which makes some sense because it's a franchise, but that really is our growth area. So the one place, after sitting through a splendid process, I disagree a little bit, is that one particular group. And I promise it's not because I'm enamored of the specific staff. It's because I'm enamored of the future. And there's an area of future there on internet and business opportunities. Otherwise, Fred, this was a good gamble. You did a very good job, and your staff so far.
I'm intrigued that you raised that because that was one of my concerns, that when I, before it was part of the Office of Management and Finance, it was an independent Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, and I was in charge of it, and it brought in millions of dollars in audit fees as well as the ongoing revenue. So what was the Budget Committee's rationale for having a cut to that program?
I'll leave that to the staff.
Thomas, I can let you talk about it if you'd like. We took that ahead in to the discussion in the mayor's office, and it didn't make it through, correct?
Hi, I'm Thomas Lanham with the Revenue Division. That's correct. It's a $21,000 cut to resources for legal support for litigation around franchise renewals, and we just think we can absorb that internally, given that the priorities for the city as a whole and the charge that we were given to come up with a 5% cut. The $21,000 cut to that particular area, we think we can absorb that.
So is there a realignment package to take it from some other part of revenue and put it into franchises and utilities?
No, not a formal realignment package.
I'd like to see that because it's, like I said, it brings in a lot of money. And in fact, we didn't fund as many audits as we would have liked to during the recession, and there was repeatedly requests for additional funding. So I'm really concerned to see that particular cut.
We're going to have more firms in the franchise area in the future rather than fewer. If the future that David Olson predicted 5 years ago occurred and we had open access across the internet, we'd have even more. So one of the reasons why I have a different point of view here is I just see a different future. We know we have Google talking about a bribing, but in a perfect world, we'll have a lot more competition and hopefully a lot more franchise income.
And you keep reminding me of things that I meant to ask. I know that the Digital Equity Action Plan is coming to council on April 6th, and that's looking at inclusion, because there actually are several parts of the Office of Management and Finance which are outward-facing rather than inward. Did the Budget Committee consider a request for funding outreach with the Digital Equity Action Plan?
Remember, I am a mere advisor.
I know. I just wonder, was that put before you as an option to have a package? And you decided not to do it, or how did that not come with an additional request?
The Digital Equity Action Plan was $199,000 for one FTE. The plan wasn't completed yet. It's now completed. Staff completed the plan after the budget submittal. I think what happened, my understanding at the OMF Advisory Committee level was that really there were just a lot of asks on the table from OMF, and it needed to be pared down following direction from the CAO. And so that was one area that didn't come forward. I think there's a larger question. It's included as a council consideration item in the CAO's budget. And so it's still on the table for the council's consideration. Could be included in the mayor's proposed, should he so choose to do that.
We'll have an opportunity to discuss it on the 6th as well. I just wanted to know if the budget committee had thought about it and decided not to do it for some reason. Thank you.
Mayor, if I could have a few questions. It's just fun having Robert McCulloch on the hot seat. Just a comment, Fred. I just want to thank you and your team for the outstanding work you did on the PCI compliance. And somewhere in the archives of the city of Portland will be recorded as a footnote, and someone 100 years from now will think that it was just a walk in the park, but it was excruciatingly difficult to get to compliance with big stakes. And all of us appreciate the good work, and those of us that have complex systems particularly appreciate the work. So thanks to you and your team for that. Second, with all that money out there you think we can bring in, and since we're committed to innovation, I just think you should give Thomas 5% of whatever he can collect the next month or so, and I think we'll call it good. Two structural questions. The first has to do with sort of imagining PDC's role going forward and how that interacts and intersects with your mission. And I guess I just wanted to raise the broader question. Are there pieces of your business, like Spectator Venues Program or other pieces, which someday we ought to consider migrating to PDC as we think of PDC as an entrepreneurial agency that has to create its own revenue source and may do that by being a property owner and a quasi-developer?
I'd say yes. I mean, if in fact the intent were to say, let's look through bureaus for entrepreneurial activities, I think they're spread throughout. I could see I'm looking across the board, but I think about golf courses and the Speedway. I think about leases that we had some discussion of in the mayor's office. There's some things that we do, leasing, that could be more entrepreneurial rather than just taking care of our buildings. So if the objective were, what are the activities that could sustain PDC in that function, I think it's a larger question. I would say yes, we do have some.
I'm glad to hear that, because I think in some ways there's two different roles we're talking about. One is the traditional role that OMF plays, which is excellence in managing city assets. And the second is what we are charging PDC with going forward, which is finding revenue streams to replace TIF. And as part of that, thinking about how they can optimize revenue out of city-owned assets. So the second thing I just wanted to ask is, and this goes to, you mentioned in passing, the Equitable Contracting Commission and some of the work. We continue to find that there's some significant confusion in the public's eye about who does what internally. And, for example, a blurring of the lines about who oversees the CBA, the Community Benefit Agreements process, versus who is looking at equity and contracting and the like. And what's your sense about when we'll be able to create some clearer lines about who does what and then communicate that to the public?
Who does what's a little general. I mean, on some lines I can see that maybe I think are clearer than others. I think to date the ECPC hasn't quite found its legs in terms of responding to the mission and clarifying what their objectives are and then meeting those, and I think they're making progress. They had a retreat. They now have four subcommittees to look at different components, and then I think we'll come up with some recommendations that will be useful, and I think that may add some clarity to it. I guess I'd step back because you gave me a general enough question. My perspective is that in the whole region, there are lots of projects where, like we're doing in the Portland building, and like you're doing on water projects, putting aside 1%, but it's a little bit reinventing the wheel each time that you go through that process. And I think to get some ongoing investments, it would be nice to have a system that pools, for example, a convention center hotel, Portland Public School, maybe a port investment, our projects, and you put the money in a mechanism that not only trains people, but has ongoing activities where they can contribute. Because right now, we might be doing something for tradeswomen and apprentices, and we finish the project, and then where do they go? And I think we can do better regionally, but it's beyond just the city.
And I think that's the kind of big thinking long-term I think we should embrace. Let me just give you an analogy. When Dante knocks on my door, I generally have a sense of what his areas of concern are, and I'm getting a clearer sense of how he interacts with my bureaus. And we're sort of beginning to develop that relationship. And and so equity plans, goals, you know, the kinds of things that, and the metrics that the Office of Equity is laying out for each of us. I'm less clear about the commission. And if it's knocking on my door, and one of the problems is beyond is a concern that's really beyond their capacity to resolve, which is we use words like community benefits agreement interchangeably. There's more than one meaning. We talk about it in one context of the comp plan, and another through a city council ordinance, and then we've got more generally our goals about improving our MWESB performance that is partially in one of your shops, but also partially lies as a responsibility of the Bureau. So I guess what I'm saying is I think we would all benefit from greater clarity about roles and responsibilities, and then we can all collectively make that system be more effective.
And they just had a retreat. I think, I should mention, Fred, they just had a retreat, and I think it's fair to say got to a better level of clarity, and now they need to communicate the results of that to the council. But my staff participated and came back, you know, with thumbs up that they had achieved a considerable improvement in clarity of their role and how they're going to function, and that maybe some of the storming phase that they've been in early on in their work is now passed into a more productive and clear path.
So, and I would say ask that question in 4 months. I mean, let's see how this goes. If we've got clarity, I think we're going to make progress, and that they'll make progress in terms of clarifying and making recommendations. So. Mm-hmm.
Just to comment, I also think, I mean, I think you're correct in terms of what we need to clarify for the commission and for the city and whether there's a community benefits agreement or what it's supposed to be. But I also think that we need to make sure that we understand that it is in terms of what benefits the community and not what's in the best interest of the entity, the city, in how we roll this out. I think sometimes our consciousness gets flipped and then we're not considering it from the best interest of the community side in allowing ECPC or others to participate in the process of determining what's in the best interest of the community.
Dante, what other comments did you have on the RMF budget proposal as a whole?
What I mentioned the other day in terms of issues of, is this city a model employer of people with disability, and are we focusing on increasing how we create an environment for disability? You know, this is the second or third time that HR has tried to get some ongoing funding for that. And so at the moment, that's not at least recommended here. And coupled when you don't also provide a staff person, additional staff person for the focused outreach and recruitment, I think all that comes together to culminate in we're not providing what we say we want to provide in terms of being a model employer of people with disability. You mentioned the digital action plan. In what I read, does that does the Portland Community Media provide internet access to households in the city? And if so, do we know how many won't be served if that's the case?
PCM doesn't directly do that. They provide training for folks around equity and around access generally. In terms of the number of households that don't have access, we did a survey a few years ago. About 15% of Portland households don't have access to the internet from their homes. And that number jumps up to about 30% when you take a look at disadvantaged communities, lower income, things like that.
Right. No, I think that's the case. And when you add disability, certainly refugee and immigrant communities, those most vulnerable in our city, the digital divide is truly in existence. And so just being conscious of that as we evaluate where we're going.
I thought you raised the Portland Community Media cut. That's $44,000, and it's for a 0.7 FTE, which I'm guessing you can't get a 0.7 FTE within OMF. And in my mind, Portland Community Media is a fantastic vehicle for helping people understand and engage both with the city and with others in the community, and it's also extremely good for training. Did you have a comment on that too?
I used to work with Portland Community Media, and I understand that the position is not just to provide understanding of what the internet is, but how to use it for families, and it's multi-generational, not just for kids, but for adults, for immigrant communities. And I think what I'm most surprised about cutting the possibility of cutting this position or this funding for this position is that all other bureaus have been talking about how equity is the priority and how we move forward, and then this is the position that we are cutting, the one that is for precisely for equity. So I'm a little bit surprised, confused, and disappointed.
I'm Claudio Campuzano with the City Budget Office. I think Fred did a good job of covering the broad scope of the OMF request. So I'll just touch on a few issues a little bit more in depth. But just as a general matter, our recommendations were, we recommended the bulk of the cuts proposed by OMF in light of citywide balancing. We also recommended a number of ad packages, including the packages that were discussed by Ken earlier regarding revenue collection. There were a couple of items that I'd like to just sort of, moving beyond just calling balls and strikes on things, just wanted to provide a little bit more background on the recommendation with regard to electronic equipment replacement. This is one item that, if you recall, several years ago was cut by Bureau of Technology Services in order to reduce rates so that impacted bureaus would be paying less, and it was part of a citywide reduction. As part of this budget, BTS is requesting to reinstate that replacement charge. This type of replacement is it's really good financial policy. It's really a pay-me-now, pay-me-later type situation, and rather than dealing with periodic, very large costs, we spread it out over time. So we're very, very supportive of this request and recommended that it move forward. We did recommend, however, that the general fund, this does have primarily a general fund impact because the electronic equipment we're talking about is primarily public safety equipment. It's the radios and the in-car mobile technology. So we recommended that about $900,000 of the PSSRP, the Public Safety System Revitalization Project resources, be utilized to mitigate that impact on those general fund bureaus, and that replacement fund would begin in 17-18, so that the other half, so of the $1.8 million that BTS estimates is required, $900 would be covered by the general fund, and $900 would be covered by bureaus. And I understand Catherine's concern about that, and so that's one of the reasons why we were recommending moving, only implementing that a year out, so at least to give some time for the public safety bureaus to develop some plan, whether it's requesting additional general fund or finding it within their existing base. So I just wanted to highlight that item. And with regard to the data center, also we do recognize that the data center will provide a higher level of service, both in terms of disaster recovery and in terms of just overall stability and risk management. That said, it will likely be at a higher cost in operating, and we don't know what that number is yet. That said, we have recommended that a pretty significant portion of the capital set aside for this year be utilized to pay for the entire general fund portion of the project, so not just the first year, but the full 3 years, and set that aside to fund the general fund portion. It's still going to have some significant impacts on non-general fund bureaus. They've been working. OMF has been working with those bureaus through the budget process to just help them understand those impacts and start to build those into their financial plans. One thing that I should note is that as part of our recommendation, we did note that the allocation plan for those costs might have some issues, and so we recommended that an alternative be developed based on the actual users of the data center here in the Portland building. That might have differential impacts on non-general fund bureaus. So I just wanted to highlight that to the degree that we choose a different allocation that more closely maps to who's actually using that equipment that's moving, it would have a heavier impact on utility bureaus, Kayenta and the other systems are there. Whereas most of the general fund supported systems are out at the Portland Communications Center and in the Justice Center. So just wanted to highlight those for council. But other than that, I'll open up for questions.
So I have one more set of questions. That is about procurement reductions, the Prime Contractor Development Program, Minority Evaluator Program, Mentor Protégé, and Prime Contractor Residential Housing. Doesn't seem to me that I don't understand why we would be cutting programs that we know we're having challenges in reaching our equity goals. Seems like we should be adding more funding to those rather than less.
Well, we certainly don't disagree with you, Commissioner. It's a very important part of what procurement does. Unfortunately, we're in a position where if we don't make some reductions there, we're going to reduce people that are helping us make the procurement happen for the different bureaus. So it was a very difficult position to put us into. A couple of the pieces, I think, are worth noting. The Mentor Protégé program that we're proposing that be reduced is something we participated with the Port of Portland for a number of years. They were changing the direction of that program and really creating something that looked a lot like what we're doing inside the Prime Contractor Development Program. So we thought, no sense in paying twice for that. We don't see where we're going to lose anything by not being able to support that program. I feel pretty strongly about that. There was a housing coordinator program that we had funding for. It never got started. And so before we started, if we're looking for ways in which we're going to meet our 5% reduction, that one had the least harm because we weren't doing anything there yet to begin with.
That doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry. And besides which, you cut the mentor program, but you also cut the prime contractor development program.
I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Like I say, it wasn't that we think those programs aren't important. We're faced with bureaus that have very large projects to get out the door that our people are working on. And then we have this other program that we're trying to encourage the contractor community to be able to engage with us. We have the cut in the Prime Contractor Development Program. We have about $50,000 reduction. We're still going to have $350,000 or so for technical assistance in that program, not taking it to zero. The outreach program that Tiffany Penson runs, we're making a reduction there. We would like to be able to do more work with the community, but we've been doing a lot of sponsoring that the city and other bureaus have been able to take advantage of. Maybe those other bureaus can help with that effort as well. These were tough decisions. I'm not saying that it was easy to reach that, but we were given a direction to reduce the budget by 5% and deliver all the services we're delivering and deliver more services that the bureaus want us to deliver. And we thought that this was the prudent and responsible way to approach that.
Obviously, both of my bureaus are general funds, so I have the same challenge. And in both of my bureaus, we looked at how to avoid cuts to people of color and people with disabilities. So it's obviously a council issue. I appreciate the explanation. I think following on Commissioner Fish's comments earlier, we could maybe use a work session. I know we're going to be having the evaluation of the pilot projects for the community benefits agreement coming to us in May. There's the issues with the commission and such. There's just a lot of stuff. And then every time I get to vote on a $3 million contract that's got $20,000 going out to minority businesses, I just feel like we've got a lot of work to do in that area. And it's not directed to you. It's we generally have a lot of work to do in that. And so if it's not these programs, then what is it that we, the council, could invest in that would get us over the hump in that arena? The other thing that just popped into my vision was this, the